Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Corey Knockreiner, who is trying to do an email when he should be focusing on a podcast.
Before we start, a bit of a spoiler warning in here if you're a Mr. Robot fan and have not watched through episode 6. We will be recapping the hacks that have taken place through the first 6 episodes of the series towards the end of this episode after the news. So if you haven't watched through it and you want to, maybe hold off on listening to this podcast until you've had a chance. But before that robot recap, we've got 2 news stories, including the latest in speculative execution vulnerabilities and an update on an APT hacker organization.
Must be Mr. Robot and Elliot up to no good.
Exactly. Let's go ahead and hop in. All right, we have a couple of news stories to start with today. And the first one is...
The news is, I'm fighting you in fantasy football, this team, and you will lose.
You know what? I probably will. I don't understand how your team is doing so well this year, but well done. I'll find some way to pull off a miracle. Anyways...
Back to the news.
Our first one's actually an update on like a 2-year-old saga that's been going on for quite some time now. It was back in, 2017 when we first saw these speculative execution vulnerabilities popping up in Intel and AMD CPUs.
Yeah, when everyone realized that their processors were just guessing what to process next.
Exactly. And one of the variants that came after the original Meltdown Inspector vulnerabilities were 2 types of attacks called Zombie Load and Riddle. And just this last week, the same researchers that disclosed those original vulnerabilities and had a hand in Meltdown Inspector just disclosed new speculative execution vulnerabilities in Intel CPUs that are incredibly similar to the original Zombie Load and Riddle vulnerabilities from that year.
Good job with fixing that, Intel.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like we've talked about speculative execution a few times on here, but quick refresher. So speculative execution is basically the CPU performing 2 tasks simultaneously before it needs to do them, so that depending on where the process flow and whatever application you're running goes, it can have the result of those tasks ready to go right then and there. It basically speeds up processing time. And with these vulnerabilities, when a speculative execution results in accessing an invalid memory location, the processor by default previously aborted and then grabbed arbitrary data from buffers in the CPU. So buffers being the closest, fastest memory to the CPU. And the researchers found last year
that... I thought buffers are people that wax your car.
And that too, yes. It goes and grabs data from the car waxers. The researchers found last year, though, that they could manipulate the buffers to contain sensitive data like cryptographic keys or passwords and also cause an aborted speculative execution on the process, which then leaked the information from those buffers back to the attacker. So Intel fixed or attempted to fix the original Zombie Load and Riddle vulnerabilities back last year when they were found out. But as it turns out, they missed a few variants, and that includes a new one that came out as a part of this disclosure that takes the time to actually execute an attack like this down from several days to 30 seconds.
Which is big, by the way. I mean, we talked about the one thing with speculative execution issues, like all of these and the past one, Spectre Meltdown, was one, they're very complex, but 2, while you gained access to data in CPU buffers, you don't always control what's there before it. So it could take lots of time and work and effort for your malicious program to find anything. So now being able to do it in 30 seconds actually really ups the impact of these type of vulnerabilities.
Exactly. And the researchers actually warned Intel back when they did the first patch that their mitigation was not sufficient. They let them know earlier in May. And since then, now they have disclosed these new vulnerabilities in a statement saying they're extremely disappointed in Intel. And they felt that Intel was giving off the impression that they were only looking at one variant at a time instead of the actual root issue to most of these speculative execution vulnerabilities, which, I mean, from my basic understanding of CPU architecture, it seems like it's kind of tough to combat these from a CPU standpoint right now. or just microcode updates without re-architecting the entire CPU.
Which is something that I think Intel's probably doing. Exactly. Got to update that hamster in your computer on its little hamster wheel. The other question is, do we lose all the optimization? I mean, if we've talked about this before, but speculative execution is all about doing a little bit of extra stuff and guessing so that when you being the processor gets what you're really supposed to be processing, hey, you might already have the result. But I mean, one way to avoid these vulnerabilities is stop using speculative execution. But isn't there like a 20% to 30%, it lowers the exactly. speed of our processors. So it's kind of this rock and hard place. Do you think maybe Intel will release like for secure facilities, there will be gaming processors that just might have more vulnerability surface, and there will be government, it won't be FIPS obviously because it's not encryption, but maybe there'll be a class of processors for business that if you really care about this stuff deeply.
Or like cloud and virtualization versus desktop.
Oh, exactly, because obviously that's the biggest danger.
Exactly. If someone already has code execution on your desktop computer, in general, this type of vulnerability isn't going to do a whole lot more than they could already do, which is basic malware.
And we've mentioned that before. If it's not clear, you do have to have a code running on the victim machine in order to pull this off.
But in the cloud, where you might have multiple tenants on a single piece of hardware,
it becomes a guest bypass where you can get out of your guest VM environment, get into the hypervisor or other VMs, and bam, you own it all.
I think you're Mr. Robot. This before. Exactly. I think I've kind of stated this before, but I do think that at some point soon we're going to get cloud VM based CPUs that are maybe a little less efficient, a little slower, but way more secure than we would on desktop ones, where all you really care about
is
they'll
power. Be running on Blade processors. So while these $2,000 processors will be 20% slower, they'll probably still be pretty fast.
Yep. So I found a funny, at least in my mind, funny thing where someone did a diff of the original zombie load disclosure and the new zombie load disclosure.
I'm not an engineer, Mark. What the heck is a diff?
Comparing the contents of something, usually an application code, but in this case, the white papers for their disclosure, and there was not a whole lot changed. It was basically like renaming words to their new words for the new area and the variant. It was the majority of the papers.
It's pretty hilarious. I mean, you sent it to me. It's a PDF, and if you scroll through it, the diff essentially is shown in red, and there's not a whole lot of red. So these guys didn't have to change much to the original flaw in order to get it working.
So I kind of understand why they're a bit upset, and that it seems like Intel didn't look past the specific variant they originally reported and look at the whole picture of any potential avenue of attack.
If I was going for the devil's advocate to like defend Intel, maybe there could be an argument to, when you know about a new vulnerability, you need a workaround or mitigation really fast. So maybe you put out a mitigation, in which case you're not fixing the core vulnerability, you're just doing something to fix the thing you know. But if you're not going to follow that up, hopefully within still a relatively short period of time, with a core root vulnerability fix, that's going to be a problem.
Yep.
So, who knows whether Intel was still planning on going deeper and fixing the whole thing, but it sure doesn't look very good.
I think the counterpoint to your devil's advocate is that they did, these researchers did disclose this new variant, and as of yet, it is still unpatched.
How long ago, do you know?
Back in May, at least. So, and I get microcode updates to CPUs are really risky. They're probably really complex.
Yeah, if you thought kernel blue screens of death were bad, I'm sure a microcode update on your actual CPU is a little scarier.
Exactly. So, fun update. It'll be, these researchers are getting a little more snarky and snarky with each release. So it'll be interesting to see what they find next and how they market that vulnerability too.
Yeah, I do think, we used to say I don't want to say you don't have to worry about these vulnerabilities. You do, but we already talked about they need code execution already. But before they were complex, took a long time to exploit. Now they're not. I mean, we used to say you don't really have to worry about new chipsets or hardware because there will be patches that mitigate, and that is still true. But I do think in the next couple years, hardware fixes are going to be the thing.
Exactly.
So, granted, we all upgrade our processors every 3 to 5 years anyway, so no big deal.
I am in dire need need of upgrading mine. It's starting to get a bit long in the tooth.
I need my GPU. Someone needs to put a huge vulnerability in a GTX 1080 so that I have an excuse to go to RTX 2080 Ti.
By the way, I was going
to... Or just send me money and I'll buy one now.
See, I was thinking that we really need a new password cracking rig and I'll volunteer to house it at my place. And then
I could put him in SLI just to get those passwords faster.
Exactly.
No other reason.
And then because you don't want to just crack passwords the whole time, I'll just play some games on it in the downtime too.
Occasionally, I got to... put our investment to use, return an investment after all.
Exactly. So let's move on to our next news story. It's a bit of a short one, but I thought it was actually interesting, which is why I wanted to talk about it. Last week, Trend Micro researchers disclosed some additional findings in their investigation into the Iranian hacking organization known as APT-33. So this group...
While we have APT in our product names, every time someone calls a group a name that starts with APT, I throw up a little bit in my mouth.
Do you prefer like Cozy Bear and Fuzzy Bear? And
actually, I kind of do.
Bear.
At least those are funny. I like to think of the pretty sophisticated Russian hackers doing some pretty nasty things as Cozy Bears and Fancy Bears. Makes me laugh. At least I can smile a little while they're stealing all the U.S. privacy data.
Exactly. Back to APT-33, though. This group primarily targets oil and aviation industries and other rival Gulf nations. And Trend Micro found, while investigating the group, they were not using commercial VPN services to hide their locations, but instead they had set up their own private VPN network, which you might like at first think that this makes it more secure, but in reality, it made them a lot easier to track.
So before we figure out why, I mean, you would assume that, even I would, if you know how to implement it right. I mean, if you're using a public VPN, people that are trying to track proxies and VPNs know the gateway IPs for all the public VPNs, sometimes block them. If you're a government organization, a public VPN is a target that you can subpoena. I would think it would be pretty easy for me to, like, if I were to do this, if I were some bad guy, I would probably take over some server infrastructure first. I wouldn't use my own, but I would gain control of someone else's server, set it up as a VPN server, probably harden it myself too to make sure other hackers couldn't crack the server after I did. And I would think, you know, at least no one should have access to the VPN logs. You could even go to the effort of trying to, you know, put some sort of kill switch where you could, you know, delete logs or remove the server or do things under certain conditions.
Yeah, but on the flip
side... So you'd think it would be more secure. Why is it not?
Because if you're using like a commercial VPN, other people are too. So there is huge amounts of traffic in general going through it, which makes your traffic kind of just melt into that legitimate VPN traffic.
Whereas security by obscurity or the needle in the haystack effect.
Yep. But if you're using your own VPN infrastructure, then all of the connections are yours and it's really easy to basically correlate and map them between each other.
So that's absolutely true, but I guess it all depends on how good you are at securing that server and destroying it. I mean, if no one ever gains access to it to where they have the logs, theoretically, you know, especially if you detect people trying to get into that server, if you remove everything, it won't have the logs to the real IP you came from, and then you should be safe.
Yep. And
it's dependent on your security rather than just getting masses volume of information from many people that make
and
it hard for people.
In APT-33's defense, they did actually...
Oh my gosh. How many times do you get to defend nation-state malicious threat actors?
Their masking architecture was more than just the VPN. They had like basically a bunch of cloud-based proxies that they would hop through before
Smart,
hitting the
typical.
VPN,
yeah.
And then layers of separation between their command and control servers and the servers that control the command and control servers.
But gotta love Nginx.
Exactly. But in this case, there was Trend Micro was able to identify about like a dozen and a half or so IP addresses that basically belonged to APT-33 that were the launching point for most of their attacks.
So it was IOCs, IOAs, and tools, tactics, and procedures that help.
Yep.
Like you may not have to track all the way down through the proxy if you recognize a couple of IPs and even a high-level proxy from other attacks.
Exactly. And lucky for WatchGuard customers, I checked, all those IPs are in our botnet list.
Well, Trend Micro is a partner after all.
Exactly. But this seemed like... a bit of an OPSEC fail when it came to APT 33. Generally, when you think of like nation state hackers.
As soon as you say APT, it's supposed to be more sophisticated.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit of a beginner's mistake.
Yeah. On the flip side, I think everyone makes mistakes. Remember the Russians that actually were just using a pineapple in the trunk of their car to scan wireless networks? I mean, you know, sometimes everyone does dumb stuff. Could you imagine having the human OPSEC of the CIA or something when you were an agent? Like, we know security, but I simply don't have the patience and the focus to literally guard myself at all times. Everything you touch, as we'll talk about in a little bit later, you know, all that stuff. We know that me touching this glass and not going and washing it could give away some of my security. But how many people, even when they know that, are going to literally scrub everything they touch or wear gloves all day?
It's got to be pretty hardcore to be a intelligence agent or a nation state hacker, I guess.
And I think they simply make mistakes less than the average person, but I bet they make mistakes all the time.
Yep.
Otherwise, we wouldn't know about all these APT threat actors.
Speaking of APT threat actors, let's move on to our main section now. So on today's episode, I wanted to have a little fun. We're about halfway through the Mr. Robot season.
Season 4, last season of the entire series.
So before we continue, if you have not watched through episode 6 and you don't want any spoilers, plug your ears and come back as soon as you've watched it.
Yeah, this is spoilerific. We're going to be talking about episode 1 through 6. Now, by the way, if you don't know, I didn't do it this year because GeekWire is moving away from general tech and only talking about Seattle business tech. But
really?
That's why I'm not doing the season on GeekWire, according to our PR. Oh, thanks. I actually have already gotten emails and tweets at me. Where is my Mr. Robot Rewind on GeekWire? So at least some of the audience is missing it. But if you don't know, I did an article series through the past 3 seasons called the Mr. Robot Rewind. If you search for that on geekwire.com. One of the things I love about Mr. Robot, and I presume you do too, Mark, is it really is a good TV show if you don't mind dark stuff. So just artistically, creatively, production quality, it's a great TV show. But I'm a nerd. You know, as soon as you have a TV show that has computers and hacking in it, I'm going to look at it. And if you look at hacking in Hollywood over the past, it's actually laughably bad.
Hack the planet!
Yes, and you're even citing a movie we love. I mean, Hackers is kind of a movie that hacker subculture likes, but it is so not true. I mean, all the stuff you see in it, some of it has a kernel of truth that it can be done, but the way they show it, the way they visualize it, it's all BS. I won't make our editor have to beep stuff. So it's just bad. But Mr. Robot is different. I mean, Mr. Robot, if you read my Mr. Robot Rewind series, I really pedantically nerd out and screen capture a lot of these episodes. And most of the details, they do make missteps, and maybe we'll talk about that coming up, but most of the details aren't only theoretically accurate, but they're showing real tools. They're using them in real ways. And one time they spoofed a text message using the social engineering toolkit, and every step was literally the right step. So it really is an accurate show. So besides being a fun show, this may sound crazy, I think you can learn from watching Mr. Robot if you're nerdy enough to actually pay attention to the really quick screens that pop up.
Yeah, if you're quick on the pause button on the remote.
You do have to pause. You have to be a nerd like me and go frame by frame.
But yeah, they do a great job. And I also like the first thing I want to shout out is all the episode titles for the season so far are all error status codes for HTTP services.
Yep. They've done it on the titles it wasn't always HTTP error status codes, yep. But all the episode titles from the first season make technical sense.
Yep.
By the way, just to start with that, we're going to be talking about episode 1 through 6, but this is Computer Mr. Robot, so technically it's episode 0 through 5. They start at 0.
Yes. But then why was episode 1 401 unauthorized then, Corey?
Go look online and it will say episode 0 401 unauthorized.
Yeah. God, I hate how good they are. So in this season, it didn't really start out with a whole lot of hacking. Like you can tell they're kind of setting up for the drama portion of the show to close it on out.
they can't have hacking, you know, all the time. But I was a little, usually I would have, I've started a bunch of articles on our own site, secplicity.org. But the first two episodes, there was a few times they mentioned tech terms. I mean, they kept their, what I call their tech cred. You know, they do talk about tech properly too. So there's some of that, but there was pretty much zero hacking.
Yeah, it didn't really start until like episode three, I think, where Elliot had to break into an employee's house in order to basically hack into a bank was the end goal of this. And the first hack that really stood out to me was a really interesting one where he found their laptop, an old Windows laptop, and he used a real, technically kind of old vulnerability, but a real vulnerability.
By the way, they do that all the time. There's a lot of old stuff and even phreaking, but when they do old stuff, what I love is it's still very accurate.
Yep, so this one was an old sticky key combo hack from 2015 where if you boot Windows to the repair disk, you can replace the sticky key executable with command prompt. So then when you hit the sticky key combo, it's like shift five times by default, I think. On the logon screen, instead of getting the sticky key pop-up, you get command prompt with admin access, which then you can go in and change the passwords for users and log in normally.
Yeah, and there's old ways to do this. If you remember back in the floppy boot disk days, there were boot disks that actually had auto-executive batch files that would help you change the admin password.
I don't remember back to those days, but I do remember Hyren's boot CD.
Yes, Hyren's boot CD is another example. So we always used to say physical control of a machine is kind of the end game. So, you know, that was pretty much hacking 101. If you do breaking and entering, which the guy had to, which Mr. Robot, or more specifically Elliot, had to do, not his alter ego, to get into the apartment, you can use these tricks to gain admin privilege on a machine locally.
And then he used those credentials to also unlock a password manager.
Yep.
It looked like a desktop-based had pretty generic one.
Yep.
Which then had VPN credentials to hook into their
You have everything.
The bank's VPN network, I suppose.
Yeah, I will say if there's any unreality to this, it's only in that the steps he falls into are so easy and quick. Like in typical situations, when you get physical access, it takes you time to poke around and find things you might have to do. I guess there's no lateral access when it's one thing on one computer, but we'll talk about this more later. Sometimes doing these additional steps takes a little time and research when you get into the first system. So the only Hollywood part about this is the timing of it all kinds of falls into place easy.
But he is like an omnipowerful hacker, though, so it's pretty much par for the course.
Yeah, and so technically totally accurate. Timing is always something they've got wrong. I remember when he did a prison hack, which is technically, totally possible, but he figured out how to unlock a very specific kind of OT, operational technology device, that prison doors use in, I think it was something like 5 days. Mm-hmm. Normally, a researcher would have to go buy that, and it would probably take time for them to figure out the vulnerabilities.
It would
to
take 2 days
it.
For Amazon to even deliver the thing. So
I don't know. If you have Amazon Prime, I have to deliver now. I'm not sure if I can get a prison door opening mechanism now.
I bet Amazon has it.
But yeah, super accurate and pretty cool.
Yeah, episode four was another one where
episode four was quiet on the hacks, but there were hacks. There was one scene in episode four where a dark army person is basically kind of shadowing and monitoring Elliot at his apartment, and he's using radio technology, Wi-Fi technology to kind of capture sound from bug the apartment. And so you see this guy in a van. Think of the typical FBI surveillance van.
Not suspicious at all.
Yeah. And it's why are they always these white vans that literally stick out on the street? You'd think someone would like take a camper or something that doesn't, like an old rundown camper.
Those only really don't stand out in Seattle.
That's true. I don't know. If I saw a camper, while it might stand out as who the heck has a camper in New York, I'd be like, it's probably not the FBI or the Dark Army.
Fair, yes.
But anyways, there are screenshots. So you see one screenshot where he uses a tool called RTX ETL underscore TCP. It's a Spectrum server for a specific, basically a software-defined radio card. And you also see him downloading GQRX, which is kind of open source software-defined radio software. So, you know, this stuff exists, and they're implying that he's somehow using software-defined radio in his wireless monitoring of Elliot. So small, if you didn't literally pause probably half a second, 15 frames of a screenshot, you wouldn't notice. But it just shows how much work they do in using proper tools.
Which is cool. And in this episode, Elliot generated some like wireless electronic interference to kind of mask the microphone and
yeah. The actual scene is, why can't I think of CTO guy's name? Wellick. Wellick was in his apartment, and as you know, if you're watching the show, Elliot and Wellick. Well, Elliot, maybe it's a figment. We never know. We are wondering if there's any more alters in there. But anyways, I don't think he's a figment. But anyways, you know they're actually working together. So right when Elliot gets home, he notices his apartment was broken into, and Wellick immediately goes into, you know, confidential speak. So Elliot's trying to get the guy to shut up because he realizes he was bugged, why, as you imply, he jams the signal.
So episode 5, though, had one of their big hacking montages that Mr. Robot's pretty much known for.
And another cool one, like one of my favorites was the HSM heist, where they actually had to get into this really encrypted hardware key management server to kind of take over two-factor. And it lots and lots of steps to break into that. That was E-Corp, I believe, server farm. But this is a similar type
of
heist.
This was awesome. They had to break into like a data center in an office. Yeah. And it was, I would say, like, the hacking's cool that we're about to talk about, but the episode on the whole was a really good episode. And that I was sitting there, like, nervous as hell. Like,
I was on the edge of my seat for this one. It was a lot of fun.
Yep.
And by the way, you know, up until this episode, we mentioned there's no hacking in episode 1 and 2. And there was some in 3 and 4, but it was kind of run-of-the-mill basic stuff that, yes, was correct, but anyone could know. One of my worries was, show drama. Cor Adana is the name of the security consultant that has been bringing together real hackers to do these episodes and to consult and set up the hacks. He left last season. He's going to do his own show. So I was kind of worried up until this point that they had lost some of their deep hacking pedigree, because maybe he was the Eshmel seems to know his stuff, but Cor Adana seemed to really bring it all together.
But this one was still good.
Yeah, this changed my mind. I think they have a new guy that's probably good.
So they started.
They should hire us, by the way. USA,
exactly.
Are you listening? You have some hackers here that could come up with some pretty cool stuff.
Unfortunately, the season's done, or the series is done.
There has to be a new hacking show.
There we go. Let's make one.
Sounds good.
Wes, you want to film it?
So let's jump into this. Yeah. One of the things I liked about this one, too, is I was detecting what I thought were lots of mistakes and missteps about the technical accuracy of the hacking. But then when I saw how they actually did one thing in particular, I'm like, oh, wait a second. I thought that couldn't be true. How did they even get the right data? And then it turns out they were using it in a different way. So let's get into this.
Yeah.
So the goal of this was him and his sister Darlene have to get into this facility that will give them access to the people of this offshore bank. Basically, they need admin credentials of this company, someone at this company.
They're trying to drain money out of a massive bank account, basically.
One of White Rose's, where she stores all her big
funds. So it starts out with a bit of social engineering, which I thought was kind of cool, which is a form of hacking.
It started out before that. Like, immediately, I didn't write it down. What was the name of the card reader? Before they even go to the hack, and this is where I thought they were making missteps, you see at home or wherever they start, Elliot has a security ID printer, a card printer, and the first thing you see him doing is using that printer. You can get these online. I forget the manufacturer name, but the one they used is one that, like, if you're a small business and you can't afford the really high-end commercial ID cards, you get these things to print your own employee badges and stuff like that.
You can use RFID chip badges in them too. Like,
yes. And he used it to create a badge, and he actually put it into the device, so presumably he was writing something to it, which is why I'm like, the first thing I was like, well, how did he actually get the employee data that you had put on that badge? But here's where maybe the social engineering comes in. That badge was for Darlene in disguise, right?
Yep. And when she goes in, it obviously doesn't work because it doesn't have the data written to it. So she has to go back to the security guard's desk and have him basically look her up manually.
Yeah.
And during
so
that,
she like, comes and she swipes her badge and it's red. And by the way, it's called the Alpha Card Pilot ID system.
And she also, during that process, makes some distractions so Elliot can go sprint over the barricades.
Well, it turns out the whole point of that wasn't to try to crack the card. It was for that distraction.
When she
comes over to see what's up.
She spills her bag or something.
The security guard. And before she even spills her bag, Elliot not only jumps the border and gets in, but he's running. He's running real fast. So you're like, why is he moving so quickly? And it's because, you know, obviously the security guard would have checked her badge, but Elliot has to get in and do a hack before the security guard even gets to the computer.
Yep. So he makes it through the barricade, goes up, I think, the elevator stairs or something.
I think it was in the stairs for this part. He goes to a basement room.
Door, which is where the first like cool hack comes in, where he, as he's running towards the door, he notices the keypad. And it's like a wireless keypad with like a combo to unlock the door.
By the way, for this, he didn't just notice it. They would have had to, what you don't see in this episode is there's something called a reconnaissance or enumeration. They would have had to somehow do research on the business, know the exact model of key card and come pre-prepared. So this is they could have had time to do all that reconnaissance, but for this to even happen, you have to assume the fact that they spent time learning about this company and they got enough information to know the layout of the building, where the security guard's room was, where webcams were, where server rooms were, and exact models of keypads so that you could have the software and the capabilities. So that could happen, but this would have taken a lot of research and some hacks. I mean, none of that data is public stuff that you can just find on the internet.
Most likely not, but sometimes companies publish things they shouldn't publicly accessible data stores like S3 buckets.
Yes.
So in this case, he pulls out his laptop and issues some Z-Wave commands to unlock that door without even having to enter in a key combo.
Although you never see the software-defined radio or the Z-Wave card that he conveniently has in his
laptop. That's built in.
Of course. We have to judge Mr. Robot a little more harshly because one of my arguments is they do get things so right, but that means I'm going to look at little details in much more detail.
So he makes it in the room, and ultimately he's able to add Darlene's fictitious identity to the directory, the corporate directory, giving her access to the server room and the building.
And he does it. I mean, basically, this is the security guard's room, it seems like, for all the security team, the physical security team, and that's why there's a card printer there.
And while he's doing this, though, Darlene is doing some hacking on her own, basically, where before she leaves.
You might have missed a part before you talk about what you're getting at the hacking. He also has to, there's camera systems all over this place. So the next thing he does after he adds Darlene's identity is he gets into the normal security software that the security guards use to manage their camera. And he basically, at first I thought he was going to try to hack them in some way, but essentially he just copied their firmware and then started a firmware upgrade using the same firmware. But the implication was there's hundreds of cameras in this central management thing, and that firmware upgrade for all these cameras would take 40 minutes.
Which is very convenient that it takes 40 minutes on the dot.
Well, here's the other convenient thing. All the cameras go black during this time. I haven't had the time to research the specific software for this, but it is real software. You can see it in the show.
CamSec Pro.
Yeah. Would a firmware upgrade turn off all your cameras at once, or would they go black one at a time as each one was getting the upgrade?
This is IoT, so the bounds of stupidity for management.
That's true, but even the worst IoT can't. Why would it turn off one camera while it's firmware? It can only upgrade one at a time. It can literally only send the bytes to one at a time. Why would it do multiple? It seems so. There is a little bit of Hollywood. I mean, I can easily. What's the word I'm looking for? I can just ignore it. But do know, there's some Hollywood magic. I think they have to do that for timing and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't think all your security cameras would go black at the same time as you were updating firmware of each one.
Fair. So as he's doing this, Darlene gets her card working. And as she's leaving, though, she intentionally leaves her phone behind on the counter after wiping the screen clean. And the security guard picks it up.
Waves it at her.
Thumbprint on the phone as he's waving it. And she goes back and grabs it and then carefully peels off the cover she had
on the screen.
It's not
until she's in the elevator, right. But yeah, she peels it off and throws it in a Ziploc bag.
Because now she has the thumbprint of that security guard.
Which is beautiful.
Which then...
Although, I just want to be kind of funny. The name of this company was Virtual Reality, which is kind of weird to me because I saw no virtual reality anywhere in the right. scenes. Although we saw 3D printers, which we'll get to. So I think it's funny that we're at a company called Virtual Reality that happens to be where there's servers where they can get the credentials of an offshore bank that also has 3D printers everywhere.
There's like a dozen 3D printers in there.
Yeah, I think it was MakerBots too. I recognize the logo.
They use those 3D printers to print out like a gelatin, squishy, whatever.
Well, let's get there because there's a lot of detail there. I know you don't like, I'm the pedantic nerd that goes into all the detail.
You are the pedantic
and
nerd.
There's some truth and some not truth to this. First, you know, Darlene, when they get in the 3D printer room, Elliot starts working on some stuff that he's preparing. She goes over and she creates a little, environment, a closed environment, and she brings out presumably super glue. So you have a fingerprint on glass, but to actually make that fingerprint easily viewable, one of the techniques law enforcement use is they heat up super glue, and the fumes of the super glue turn into vapor, and the vapor adheres on fingerprints properly to pull them out. So there's truth to that too. I'm not an expert in fingerprint pulling, but if you're in hacker communities, you look into that kind of stuff too. So even the way she actually pulls out the fingerprint from the glass cover of the phone is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Then they scan that, but then there's some Photoshop magic we see happening, and that's actually required. I mean, you do have to adjust the contrasts, some of the things. They did it really quick, but it to me, that's the coolness, because that is some accurate stuff that researchers really have done. And finally, I don't think you see this, but the one last step you kind of have to do once you pull out contrast enough and get a little gradient on the actual patterns of the 3D, you then can pull it into 3D software, and you actually have to extrude the print a little so that you actually have, lines that something would 3D print. So all that's very cool.
Yep.
But then?
Then they print it out onto this like gelatin thumb thing.
Oh, you skip so much. You're so not a nerd.
Oh my, okay, Corey, go ahead.
They print it out on a 3D printer.
Yes.
And the other things I nerd out about is one of my many hobbies is 3D printing. You see the G-code file he uses? Every little detail of how he prints that file, from loading the G-code on a little USB stick and putting it in the printer, is cool.
I'll have you know, those that are listening, this all took place over 15 seconds, basically.
Yes. But these details are what blow my mind about this show. They get the details right, because they probably know pedantic nerds like me are watching. But they don't actually print it out on a gelatin thing. It looks like they print it out on PL, nor just normal 3D printed in a little box, because mm-hmm. they're not creating a finger, they're creating a mold. Mm-hmm. So they actually printed out a mold, and then they put some gel within the mold to create the finger.
Make a fleshy finger.
Yeah. So there's a lot of reality here, but here's where there's some missing reality. Now, this is not untrue at all. And there's a researcher even this year that did it. There's different types of fingerprint readers. Some of them are just capacitive ones and are actually trivial to get past, sometimes even with touch and pictures. Some actually are detecting heat in veins. So there is a guy that actually took Samsung Galaxy S10's fingerprint sensor, which is actually a pretty good sensor. And he tricked it with a 3D print. But what he had to do is he actually had to print a very thin material that was transparent and have his finger behind it too to get it to work. Mm-hmm. I think something to do with the heats and vein sensing. So totally theoretically possible, but I think with the modern fingerprint readers, especially in a secure facility, what looked like a blob of putty, while the fingerprint would have been correct, things like vein detection, heat detection, and even the capacitive touch that many of these readers have, I actually don't think that they went all the way they needed to in order to trick that
particular.
See,
this is where you're wrong in the background. They 3D printed a battery and like veins and all that into the thumb.
We just missed it. Show it. Yeah. That was the extra millisecond that you really had to. Unfortunately, it's only shot in 24 frames per second, and you would need 60 frames per second to have captured
exactly.
that screenshot.
Yeah. But long story short, the thumbprint worked. They were able to unlock the door to the server room using the security guard's own fingerprint. Which does eventually come back to bite them towards the end of the episode.
And literally, just so you know, the security guard that let Darlene in.
Yep.
Well, of course, it was his finger, right?
Darlene begins her hacking of trying to log into the system, create a new user account, I believe, so that they can send a wire transfer, basically.
Yeah. But then there's more. I mean,
the real cool thing that I thought towards the end is they do actually run out of time and the cameras are about to come on. Yeah. And Darlene is not anywhere near done yet. So Elliot looks up and notices the power conduit basically on the top of the server room and notices the name of the PLC system that is managing all this.
Elan?
Yep. Quickly pulls out his computer, logs into the system using what appears to be default credentials.
I think it was really short. There's a number of credentials in this, and one of the ones for admin was only like 6 characters.
Yep. So he logs in and then cuts power to the building, basically. And that's when the security guards notice that, or actually at this point, the guard's already in the room.
He did this because the guard noticed. So we're skipping so much.
We're skipping, but we also only have like...
But this is the cool stuff about Mr. Robot Remind, Mark.
Exactly.
So when they were in the elevator to get to this secure facility, you actually needed to stop the elevator.
So
and I don't think they had
the firefighter
key
card.
Yes, and that totally true. Lock picking obviously is true, but there is in that firefighter panel, we were at a Black Hat elevator talk. That is a technique you can use to force the elevator to stop on a floor. And by the way, the one thing they didn't use, which they could have, is you can use that same firefighter button to lock the elevator on that floor so that even people pressing the button on other floors, and sometimes unless you admin on the actual system, you can't move the elevator to other floors anymore.
New mistake by them to not do that.
So but anyways, the bigger news mistake is they didn't close that panel.
The guard noticed.
As he was figuring out why his webcams was down, when he was going back to his office, he realized it was a firmware update. Nothing he could do. Although I think I'd be a little curious why my program randomly opened an update firmware.
After someone really fishy looking just tried to get through.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But he saw the open panel, so he stops on the secure access.
Yep.
And they're back in this glass wall server room, so he doesn't literally see them, but he's about to come in.
Yep, and he's standing outside the room and notices that, looks at like the logs.
Yeah, the logs
he's the
of
one
that door.
In,
yeah.
Which is when he calls down to the other security guard to call the
text
cops.
Him.
Yep. He walks in.
I've been hacked, called police.
Does a super like horror movie style, I'm going to get you with the flashlight, and then stops right before the row.
This is your on the edges of the seat suspense comment.
Exactly. But anyways, he is about to find them. The camera's about to come on and Elliot cuts the power.
Yep.
And that's when S goes down.
Yeah, crap hits the fan.
Yep.
She does complete the job and they run. As soon as they run, he hears them. But then we get to a little bit of physical OPSEC.
Exactly.
Elliot
zip tying the door shut.
Happens to have zip ties in his backpack all
I
the
mean,
time.
I have zip ties in my backpack.
Who
do
doesn't?
Not? Yeah.
Do you have police grade really long heavy ones though?
Yeah, what if I need to zip tie a door shut as I'm sprinting away from security guard from a server room I just hacked into using his own thumb?
I think you're the creepy guy that zip ties someone's wrist together.
Oh, no. they lock him in the room. He does eventually get out. Cops do come. They get trapped in the building. Elliot makes a break for it to kind of distract.
He breaks for it to distract and let Darlene get away. She does a change of outfit.
Yeah, cool disguise to try and get out. And blah, 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 they live happily ever after for the rest of the
episode. He does eventually, he jumps on a bus. The police still keep following him. Eventually he rolls down a thing and
he had a rough time.
He did.
There was one other interesting hack in this episode though, kind of parallel to all of this. One of our favorite FBI agents had to go, she's been basically compromised by the Dark Army and she has to go get information from a traffic light camera from the previous episode.
Yeah, there's a very creepy taxonomy person that's her Dark Army handler, kind of do this or you will die type of person.
Yep. So she goes to the local state patrol or sheriff office and basically installs a wireless network tap onto their computer, which then she can
hook
into. Yeah,
she does a silly trick where I think she takes her phone, or was it the cop's phone?
I think it was the cop's phone.
And she swipes it. She puts it in the empty cookie thing.
Donuts.
And makes it ring. Yep. And the cop's like, why do I hear my phone ringing somewhere else? And as she walks away from her computer, it's a simple social engineering technique plus a little bit of grifting to swipe the phone.
There were three
and
other
you
cops
throw on
in
a
room,
network
though.
Tap.
How did they not notice her installing a network tap?
How do you not notice when a magician pulls your watch off your wrist?
That's a good point.
There's techniques to swipe wallets and to do all kinds of stuff in plain sight that people don't notice.
Fair. Episode 6 was back to a lot of story, but not a terrible amount of hacking.
No, a few little tidbits to keep us tech nerds interested.
There was basically Elliot is, what was it, crossed the line that shouldn't be crossed or whatever, and it's basically started blackmailing the lady from earlier in the season. To try and get her to call in to her boss to check on.
By the way, the lady that he kind of likes.
Exactly.
You know, she was originally a target for his heist, but he kind of ended up liking her.
Oops, it was an accident.
And by the way, you could even argue social engineering to not spoil all kinds of story stuff. We won't talk about it, but at this point, kind of some people in the dark are, or Vera, there's the drug dealer guy, does know about Elliot and kind of is getting involved. And he is trying to figure out a way to get at Elliot. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a form of social engineering. And so he, of course, kidnaps Krista.
Yep.
Because what better way to learn about somebody to help in your social engineering kidnappers than to get their shrink?
Yeah. So anyways, Elliot has to convince his blackmail target now to get her boss to log in and check a wire transfer, because presumably during their heist, they had compromised the server on the back end where now they can decrypt SSL traffic. And you see that as she's on the phone with her boss and he's checking this non-existent transfer, Elliot checks the SSL logs and you can now see the decrypted username and password for this higher ranking person that I'm assuming in episode 7 he'll then use to go initiate the money transfer out of the account.
And even that was social engineering too in itself, in that why would this guy do something that would suddenly make an SSL connection to expose his credentials? Well, of course, Elliot got this old character girlfriend to call her boss.
Yep, which is actually... I guess somewhat, actually not similar at all, but still similar to something that we've done previously, where it was like 2 years ago when someone was trying to, they had a really kind of well done fish targeting one of our executives here.
Yep.
And I went through and ended up convincing them to hop onto a server, presumably hosting some sensitive information.
There's sometimes you choose to communicate or start communication between you and a specific individual, or you and two different individuals, not because you really care that they're talking, but more to intercept traffic and learn more.
Yep. In this case, we were able to get like where they were connecting from and information
that was
like
done
that.
From an iPhone, if
yeah,
I remember
it was like
correctly.
Done from an iPhone in Florida or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas they claimed they were from New York, I think. And in reality, they were probably from somewhere else.
Yep.
But anyways, still not a whole lot of hacking, but
yeah. It's getting better, by the way. I started out not, I'm super vested in Mr. Robot, as you can tell. And if you read my GeekWire series, you could tell. But I was kind of bored at the beginning of this season. Maybe it's because of a 2-year hiatus kind of made me lose track. But ever since episode 4 and 5, especially 5, as you say, it's getting much better. We didn't even talk about story points, which we don't have time for, and maybe we won't spoil that in case you listen but haven't seen, but there's a lot of crazy stuff happening there too.
Exactly.
If you like this kind of thing, you know, we waited till now to do a half season recap. There's 13 episodes, so we're just about halfway through.
There's 13? I thought there was only 12. Yes.
13 if you cut, so we would have to wait and do half an episode if we wanted to be literal about it. But if you do like this, though, I mean, assuming there's hacks each week, we're happy to throw in a much shorter version where we just cover some of the interesting stuff each episode. So shout out at us.
Tweet us.
Yeah, tweet at us at hashtag the443podcast or at SegAdept or at XORRO_.
Hey.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, look at that. You're
fantastic.
The one now.
You'll hear this again in the outro if I didn't enunciate it properly.
And you did a Mr. Robot related webinar like last month.
Yeah, apparently one of the most popular. I would tell you guys to go watch it.
One of the most popular webinars.
Because I thought fair use would cover me being able to show little clips of the episode.
Oh, right. Are we still fighting that?
Yeah. So basically, I talked about missed scenes in Mr. Robot, analyzed, talked about how they were technically accurate, but then showed you real world comparisons that were very similar, very popular. Apparently people liked it. I liked doing it, but I can't tell you to go watch it now because unfortunately we can't keep it on demand.
We got to send our lawyer after them.
Apparently, fair use would have worked if I did this on my own at home, but if you're a corporation and there's any chance of profit, fair use does not work.
Time to make an exact replica of it. And...
But come on, USA Network. I obviously love your show. I'm doing nothing but promoting you. Do you really want to take down a YouTube video that's talking about how great your show is and showing 30-second clips? There's no piracy involved, you guys.
Maybe I'll accidentally leak out a BitTorrent link at some point in time.
No, that literally can't happen because you said it.
Maybe I'll accidentally do something else.
Maybe our editor will conveniently delete that.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Again, tweet at us or something if you want some more Mr. Robot recaps in the future. And if we just spoiled the first 6 episodes for you because you didn't hear our warning, sorry.
We'll put a text one too in the podcast. So maybe if you don't listen and you don't read, well then... Not so sorry.
Fool me twice, can't fool me again. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on what we talked about today, suggestions for future episodes,
our stars go up to 11, by the way. 5 is not enough.
Exactly. Or if you want more Mr. Robot recaps, perhaps on the end of each episode while the season's still going, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey's at @SecAdapt. And the both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Goodbye, friends.
Ciao.